things that we say. There's actually a very large number of Proverbs that deal with our speech. It's a very important subject. It's one that the Lord saw fit to reveal a large amount of information to us on, and it's one that we need to give very careful attention to. We're all familiar with the fact that a great many of the tools that we have to use can be very useful when they're used correctly. They can also be very dangerous when we don't use them carefully. And the tongue is no different. The tongue can be a tool for great good. For instance, in Romans chapter 10, what is the thing that produces faith in a person? From hearing the Word of God. And in the context of Romans chapter 10, how do we normally hear the Word of God? Through the preaching of the gospel. Our speech, our tongue, can be an instrument for great good, for instance, in the teaching and preaching of the gospel. However, when used incorrectly, it can be an instrument of great destruction. Let's look at James chapter 3. James chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, it says, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." And of course here, the picture is given of the tongue, or our speech, as being something that is controlled through great effort. And the person who can discipline himself to the point where he can have this kind of control over his speech is a truly well-disciplined person indeed. He goes on to say, "Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." So this same tongue that we might use to preach the gospel to someone can also be used to do great harm to someone and to ourselves. It is an instrument that requires a great deal of discipline to be used properly. Let's also look at Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21. Another passage that deals with the destructive potential of the tongue. It says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." So death and life are in the power of the tongue. It's an instrument for good or evil, depending on how we use it. As we study these passages that we're going to be looking at in Proverbs, and in other places that deal with our speech, we need to limit them solely to the spoken word. When we read passages about the tongue and its use, are we to take that to be 100% literal, that it only applies to our speech? What about other areas of communication that we commonly use? What are some other areas of communication where we need to apply these same verses that talk about the tongue, but we can still apply them to forms of communication where we don't actually use our spoken word?
Email.
That's one of the first ones that popped into my mind. Communication over the computer. Email, instant messaging, text messages, blogs, bulletin boards, forums. A whole host of communication possibilities that have been opened up by the computer. And a lot of the things that we read about in the Bible that have to do with the tongue and our speech, I think, would apply just as much to that form of communication. I think we might also add the written word, things that we might write down, and letters that we might send to people. So while the passages refer specifically to the spoken word, I think that we could apply them equally to any form of communication that we might use. And today, in particular, the computer is one that we need to keep in mind as an area where we need to be careful with our communications. All right. What's
I left my hearing aids at home, so I'm missing off the subject.
Right. That's all right. No, we're talking about using the computer to communicate. One of the most common errors that people make in using the computer to communicate is forgetting just how widespread information becomes once it's put into the computer and once it finds its way onto the Internet. There have been some very famous or well-known instances of people that have sent out email that they thought was confidential, containing some very personal information, and it has ended up literally being spread worldwide. So it's a very common form of communication today, and one that we need to keep very, very much in mind as we read these proverbs concerning our speech or our tongue. Let's start by looking at proverbs that deal primarily with sins of the tongue or the foolish use of our tongue or speech. One particular subject that's talked about a great deal in the book of Proverbs is the subject of slander or lying. Now, what is slander?
Things said about a person intending to defame them.
Okay. Saying something about someone to defame them, saying something about someone that you know is not true. And that's slander. And it's something that is talked about in the book of Proverbs and in other passages in the Bible. And we also have lying, the deliberate telling of an untruth. Or as Brother Waldron puts it, and I like the expression he uses, handling the truth carelessly. That's talked about a great deal in the book of Proverbs. We're told that it's something that God hates. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 6. In Proverbs chapter 6, beginning in verse 16, we have a passage that begins by saying that there are six things that the Lord six things that the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination to him. And we drop down to verse 19, and one of the things on this list that are hated by God and things that are an abomination to him, in verse 19, it says, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. God hates lying. That's a very blunt way to put it, but God hates lying and will not tolerate it. We see that, according to the book of Proverbs, that lying will lead to the destruction of the liar. Let's look at... No, go ahead.
That we call liars. Now, I'm going to set up two examples and let you tell me which. This guy's always said his stories, and we know they're lies that he said it, but he never tells nothing that will injure a person. Or, now the next person, he doesn't talk very much, but everything he says is truly a lie and it hurts a person. Now, are both of them lying, or is it just one lie?
I would say that both of them would be.
Some person, I don't know if this is what he's talking about, the individual who tells a story, he knows it's not true, and the people that he's telling it to knows it's not true.
Yeah.
He's just exaggerating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a deliberate attempt to deceive anyone, whereas the other one he mentioned obviously is.
Well, yeah, if you're swapping stories to entertain each other and everybody knows that the other fellow's just telling to be windy, then that's something different. That's not much different than reading a fairy tale to a child. But at the same time, I know people that will tell stories about things that they've done and have a lot of very questionable details in them. But they tell the story as being truth. And I would define that as being a lie. But when people are just entertaining each other, obviously that's something entirely different. Any questions or comments from anyone on that?
One example I think of is in the time of the prophet when he was speaking to Ahab. When he brought his message to Ahab, the first thing he said was, well, you'll go and be a prophet.
Yeah.
But everybody in the room knew that was not true. But even though what he said was not true, it's not a lie because everybody knew what he meant.
Yeah.
So he clearly knew. So assuming that everybody knows what you're really saying.
Yeah, the context, the audience, very often your tone of voice, whether or not he might have responded in that instance with a tone of sarcasm in his voice, but there were definitely some clues there, and he didn't really say that with the expectation that it would be believed. And lying as well. Trevor brought up the subject of a person saying something that's technically true and yet using it to tell a lie. How could something like that happen?
Yeah.
taking things that people have said out of context, not saying everything that pertains to a particular subject, maybe just telling half of the story, for instance, or the half of the story that supports your position and leaving off information that you know contradicts what you want the other person to believe. So a lot of ways that a person can lie. Let's look at some proverbs now that deal with lying leading to harm or destruction to the liar himself. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 12 in verse 13. It says, the wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just shall come out of trouble. How is it that the wicked become snared by the transgression of their own lips? What are some ways that can happen?
Well, I just say one lie leads to another.
Okay. Okay. One lie leads to another, and you end up in this loop where you have to keep up making stories until the day comes when you run out of good stories to cover yourself. I think someone else had a comment over here. Okay. Pardon? Mm-hmm. All right, a false witness shall not be unpunished, and he that speaketh lies shall perish. So, there are things that will happen to a person in this life if they tell lies. Very often, eventually, they'll catch up with them. And then you've got the eternal consequences of lying. We've already seen in Proverbs chapter 6 that God hates lying. Now, if God hates something, and we do that thing, what expectation do we have in the judgment?
All lies shall have their part.
Right? From the book of Revelation. We're told what's going to happen to liars. When God hates something, and we go ahead and do that thing, then we're going to pay the price for that. And here in chapter 19, we can back up to verse 5. It's almost word for word what's said in verse 9. It says, a false witness shall not be unpunished, and he that speaketh lies shall not escape. Virtually the same thing repeated there in the same chapter. So lying is a very serious thing. Let's look at chapter 21 and verse 28. Again, a false witness shall perish, but the man that heareth speaketh constantly. So a false witness shall perish. And then the passage that we've referred to already in the book of Revelation. In fact, there's two passages there that we can look at. Let's look at Revelation chapter 21. Revelation 21, and we'll be looking at verse 8. It says, but the fearful and unbelieving, and the abominable, and murderers, and whoremongers, and sorcerers, and idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Let's turn also to chapter 22 and verse 15. It says, for without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. So liars are associated with some very unsavory types of persons. And a lot of times people of the world who wouldn't think of doing something that would cause them to fall into some of these other categories will lie without blinking. But lying is very serious, and it's a very serious matter with God. Exactly. Slander is really a particular type of lie. Lying in general can be about many things. Slander is a lie that you tell about a person in order to cause them some type of harm or to advance yourself at their expense.
Well, that was the reason I asked the question that I did. Because this lie that you're going to be penalized, God will penalize them. Is it going to be one that has a slanderous nature to it, or is it going to be one that he said a story that's false? For example, I write some short stories. Well, I get the idea of something that happened, really happened. But when I get through the story, my whole story was stuff to add to that for people to make a reading. Well, I don't consider myself lying there. I just think of myself putting a lot of stuff in there to make it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly you don't present those stories as being historical. I mean, you don't present those stories as being relating true events. You present those as fiction. So when we pick up a short story, for instance, we understand that that's a fictional account of some event. And
but some of the things I do, for example, I wrote a story about Stephen Waterbones, and the captain's story was Blood on the Moon. Well, when the person seen that, he stopped to read my story. Mm-hmm. And then that's a lie. Because you know, Waterbones has nothing to do with Blood on the Moon.
Yeah. Well, you know, the literature like that is generally not taken to be literal, and people understand that you're writing fiction, and they know that the styles and so forth that are used in fiction. So you're not, as long as a person is not presenting things like that as being factual, then people understand that they're reading a story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Any other questions or comments? We're told in the book of Proverbs that lying is an evil practice. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 3, and beginning in verse 28. Proverbs 3, beginning at verse 28, it says, "Say not unto thy neighbor, Go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when thou hast it by thee. Devise not evil against thy neighbor, seeing he dwelleth securely by thee." So it says in verse 28, "Say not unto thy neighbor, Go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when thou hast it by thee." What lie is being told here in verse 28? Okay, he's telling his neighbor, I owe you something, but I don't have it today. Come back tomorrow and I'll pay you. When in fact, he's got it there to pay him today. And we see here another form that a lie can take, and another reason why people lie sometimes. So he pretends that he's going to pay him tomorrow because he doesn't have it today, but he's got the money there with him. God calls that evil. The book of Proverbs tells us that's an evil practice. And we shouldn't do things like that. Let's look at chapter 12 and verse 20. Chapter 12 and verse 20 says, "Deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil, but the counselors of peace is joy." So deceit is something that is associated with people that set out to do evil. They have evil in their heart. They have an evil intent. And deceit is one of the manifestations of that evil. Another characteristic of the liar is that he scorns justice. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 17. It says, "He that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness, but a false witness deceit." In this context, what is a false witness? We read about false witnesses in the Bible in different places. What is a false witness, and what relation do they have with justice?
A witness is someone who's damaged, or at least claims to be, to have been damaged, and doesn't tell the truth about the situation.
All right.
Or, like you mentioned earlier, tell a fire that you didn't tell others.
All right. I think we had a comment from over here, too. Okay. So it's a person who gives their account of an event that they were supposed to have seen and doesn't tell it truthfully. And very often that happens in the context of a judicial proceeding. Can you think of a very famous case, for instance, in the life of King, okay, in the life of Christ? I was thinking further back to King Ahab, but in the life of Christ, for instance, what part did false witnesses play in the life of Christ? All right. They had to bring false witnesses to find grounds for crucifixion. They even contradicted one another. That's a problem that liars have, you know, is keeping your story straight. It's bad enough for a person who's lying to keep all of his own tales straight and coordinated, but when you get several liars together and they're making up these stories, they can really get tangled up. But they played a very important part in the life of Christ. They brought false witnesses against him. And there are different accounts in the Bible where people had false witnesses brought against them. What was one safeguard that they had under the Old Testament to at least minimize the effects of false witnesses in a trial? Two or more witnesses were required. Of course, in the case of Christ, they were able to find several people that were willing to perjure themselves. But a person who would lie in those circumstances is someone who scorns justice. They don't care about justice being carried out, and they do great harm to the individual about whom the lie is told.
That's the reason that a person can be punished for especially lying on
Yeah, typically the punishment for perjury, if you're caught, can be very, very severe. There have been times in the past in other societies where the punishment for perjury was that you were taken out and given the punishment of the person that you were witnessing to falsely. So Most societies take perjury very seriously. In chapter 19, in verse 28, here in Proverbs 19, in verse 28, it says, "An ungodly witness scorneth judgment, and the mouth of the wicked devoureth iniquity." What very important word here, what very key word is used to describe the perjurer here, or the false witness? He is said to be what?
Unrighteous.
Unrighteous.
The King James says they're disreputable.
Okay. The King James describes him as being an ungodly person. Certainly not a description that we would want ever applied to us. In the same chapter, in verse 22, it says, "The desire of a man is his kindness, and a poor man is better than a liar." So another thing that we know about lying, that it's better to be poor than to be a liar. And yet there are a lot of people today that are willing to go to any lengths, including lying, in order to get gain. Yeah, I've known people that it just seems like lying became a habit with them. And lying can do that. It can become a habit. And people will tell lies when they don't even need to, just because that's what they're used to doing.
One up to yourself, one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't get let somebody else do something better than what they did.
That's right. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 14. It says, "Whoso boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain." So a person that says they're going to do something for someone or give someone a gift and they don't do it, it's said to be like clouds and wind without rain. They become known for that sort of thing. You see clouds and you see wind and you expect rain, but you don't get it. And you take note of that. And a person that does that sort of thing gains that kind of reputation. They're known to be someone who will boast that they'll do something and will not carry out their promise. And in chapter 26, beginning in verse 24, it says, "He that hateth dissembleth with his lips." Now, stop there real quick. What does the word dissemble mean? All right, disguise. And basically it's talking about lying. It says, "He that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are several abominations in his heart, whose hatred is covered by deceit. His wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin." So a person who lies and gets caught at it, and eventually, almost all liars eventually are caught, it ruins their reputations. They become known as someone you can't trust. And in verse 27, it talks about them, it's like digging a pit, and they end up falling in it themselves. So they roll a stone, and it ends up rolling over them. So lying comes back to haunt you. Lying will ruin your reputation, and as it says here, it will eventually become known. It says it will be showed before the whole congregation. People learn that a person can't be trusted. In chapter 26 as well, we learn one of the motivations, common motivations for lying. And that is hatred, talked about in verse 28. And it marks one as being a fool. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 18. It says, "He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth slander is a fool." And we can go back and if we were to ask the question, why would that be said about a liar? Why is a liar or a slanderer a foolish person? Really, all we have to do is cite the verses that we've already read and all the problems and evil that are associated with lying. All right, any questions or comments about anything we've talked about so far? Let's talk about gossip. The book of Proverbs deals with gossip. First of all, let's define gossip. What is gossip? Is gossip necessarily untrue? Okay. It is saying something about someone that could cause them hurt. We could further define it as being saying something about someone when you don't need to say it, when it serves no good purpose, when it serves no useful purpose. There might be times when you would have to go to someone and tell them that someone has done something, and it would be hurtful to the person you're talking about. But there might be a good reason to do that. But gossip has to do with telling a story about someone when it's either to deliberately harm that person or in a context where it serves no justifiable purpose in telling that story.
Telling something, and you may well tell them, "I don't need to hear that."
Mm-hmm.
And they insist that, "Yes, you do. You need to know this."
Mm-hmm.
And really, you don't. Mm-hmm. It's like I heard an illustration about it that it's like feathers in the wind. Mm-hmm. Once you tell something, there's no way that you're going to be able to gather all those feathers back up
mm-hmm.
and straighten it out when you find out the truth about it.
One of the key principles in handling classified information when you're dealing with the government is the concept of need to know. And that's the idea that even though a person may have the same level of clearance that you have, and they may have the technically they may have the level of clearance to hear a piece of information that you might have, but there is also an additional requirement called need to know. Do they need to know this information to do their job? And I think with gossip, we can apply that principle as well. Before repeating a story about someone, something that they've done or said, ask yourself, does this person that I'm considering relating this story to need to know? Is there a useful, positive purpose for relating that story? And if the answer is no, then you probably don't need to be relating that story. So that's another thing to keep in mind is when it comes to relating stories is the principle of need to know. Does the other person need to know this information? Or is it just something to entertain them and to entertain me in the telling?
In the 11th chapter in verse 13, it says, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals them.
All right.
And he also, as well as also says, a fool uttereth all his mind. God's telling you, anything comes in, it's
going to
go out.
Yeah, I worked with a fellow one time that was real upfront about himself. He said, if you ever have something that you don't want repeated, don't tell me, because I'll repeat it. So, but we'll stop here, I think, for this week. And Lord willing, Wednesday night, we'll take back up here talking about the subject of gossip.